An upstart senator tries to unseat his own party's president. He goes up to the snows of New Hampshire, shakes as many hands as possible, tells them the direction that he'd like to take America. The president, confident of victory, just stays in the White House, never ventures up to the Granite State. And he's beaten by the incumbent who never went to the state, beaten by 7 points. If I tell that story to you now, you might say, well, boring. President won. He didn't even try. And that upstart senator needs to go home and suspend his campaign now and raise some more money, perhaps, go back to the Senate. But when I say it's 1968, the senator is Eugene McCarthy. The president is Lyndon Johnson. Then you probably know, as we are fond of American political history here, that in that year, McCarthy was given no chance, and serious people like Senator Robert Kennedy, then of New York, were not running. So even a 7-point loss to an incumbent president shocked the nation and was spun as a win. And it did signal very much discontent on the Vietnam issue and caused Lyndon Johnson to declare that he would not seek, nor would he even accept, the nomination of the Democratic Party. In some ways, a myth was born there. New Hampshire can take down a president or frontrunner and catapult an unknown nominee. These snowy little hamlets have a wisdom. It wasn't even the first time New Hampshire helped to unseat a president, to make him think twice about running. In 1952, for the first time, the New Hampshire primary would be a, quote, beauty contest. A candidate would be selected by name. Cagey, charismatic, TV-loving Estes Kefauver, senator from Tennessee, caught wind of this and slapped Harry Truman all over New Hampshire. Delighted Granite State voters with his coonskin smile. And he won there. Signaling that something was very wrong with the Truman administration in 52. Yes, this is not the David McCullough Truman that we know today. This is the Truman of the early 50s. America was just simply tired. New Hampshire loved Kefauver. But Truman, of course, didn't. He did everything he could to deny the man that he called cowfeeder from getting the nomination. On the other side of the party world, New Hampshire also picked former General Eisenhower over Senator Bob Taft, gave him his first political victory, and set up a successful run for the White House. What is it about this state? 1.3 million citizens, not many large cities. Manchester at 100K is the largest. What gives them the right to pick the commander-in-chief? Critics point out that the state's 97% non-Hispanic white, far higher than the rest of the nation. Perhaps there is no answer. It might just simply be divine right, the fact that it's first because it's always been first. Indeed, its history goes back a little further than one might expect, all the way back to 1916, the heady days of the progressive zeal in America, when states took the nominating process from the smoke-filled rooms and the bosses and put it in the hands of the people. Now, in those days, New Hampshire voters didn't select a person. In 1916, they were selecting delegates, but since delegates were then often associated with a candidate, New Hampshire voters, in effect, could do the same thing that they were doing now. So when Hoover delegates won in New Hampshire in 1928, delegates pledged to Herbert Hoover, it was a one-punch knockout, and Hoover was going to get the nomination to succeed Coolidge. His opponent, the Brown Derby as he was known, Al Smith, also got the endorsement in that year, bested any opponents that he would have in 28. It's like an American political oracle of sorts, and we go there with questions that New Hampshire answers. Should Cal Coolidge, should he be allowed to run in his own right for president? After all, it's 1924. Coolidge had took over from Warren Harding, died in office. Coolidge was the vice president. It seems normal now that that person would then run for president, but only Teddy Roosevelt had done that before. Didn't necessarily mean a precedent was set hardcore. Some people were talking, maybe somebody else should run. Should the party let Coolidge have another go at it? Yes, New Hampshire said. Should Al Smith, having lost in 1928, run again in 1932? No, New Hampshire said, as it anointed Franklin Roosevelt the governor of New York. After two terms, Should Roosevelt get a third term? That's unprecedented. New Hampshire said, yes, give him a third term. Should a famous general now become the citizen leader of the military? Yes, New Hampshire said, we like Ike. In 1968, the question asked of this oracle was, could a politician who had run at least two particularly bad campaigns make a political comeback? Eisenhower had selected as his vice president Richard Nixon, Senator of California. But Nixon would fail to succeed him in the White House. And then it got worse for him. He decided to run for governor of California in 1962. Why not? He had just run in a presidential race. He had been vice president. And in the race of 1960, he had won California. It didn't work out. He lost to Governor Pat Brown and had a disastrous press conference, which reflected a bit of the Nixon id and ego. This, he said, will be my last press conference. You don't have Dick Nixon to push around anymore. Oh yeah, that was a campaign manager's dream, right? A little off message. Because of the loss, Nixon had no hope at 64. New Hampshire Republicans that year chose Henry Cabot Lodge Jr., though he wasn't even a candidate. Lodge had been Nixon's running mate in 1960, and he was the ambassador to South Vietnam. But the grand old party ignored New Hampshire in that year and nominated Goldwater. So 4 years later, after Goldwater was trounced, after a stint at a New York law firm, where Nixon had made some good friends, Bob Hadleman, John Mitchell among them, these guys could manage Nixon well. He took to the one place on earth where a candidate who gave a sayonara to the press and political pundits just might redeem himself. A new, older, smiling and confident Nixon now held a press conference 6 years after the disastrous one. And this time he said, gentlemen, this will not be my last press conference. The reporters laughed. Humble pie eaten. I could not let the proud and independent voters of New Hampshire think I was arrogant, Nixon reflected later. There was always the danger of an upset in a state with 32% independence. Nixon's political wisdom still holds today. Granite State voters overwhelmingly chose Nixon, and he went on to get the nomination and then the presidency. It is because of this rich history that candidates, even today, are flocking to New Hampshire. It is not, I assure you, for the relatively small amount of delegates, a fraction, a tiny micro-fraction of what either party's candidate will need to get the nomination at the convention. It's for the magic, it's for the momentum, the media coverage. Parties, both of them, protect the tradition of New Hampshire. And candidates boycott states that have tried to hold earlier primaries. It is what it is. It's first because it's first. Is it right that one state, the 46th largest state in the Union, is it right that this state should have such great influence? There are two things that you can say about New Hampshire. While not racially diverse, it is politically diverse. There's a slight Republican edge. This is not Yankee liberal New England. This is the more conservative of the New England states. There's almost an equal amount of Republicans and Democrats. And undeclared voters outnumber both of those parties. They have an open mind. Winning the state in 2008, John McCain paid a compliment. When the pundits said we were finished, McCain said, we went to the one state where voters make up their own minds. Wait a second, does that mean every other state in the Union is populated with mindless robots? Well, no. But they do think independently, and they do take the time. You can say the New Hampshire voters take the job seriously. In 2008, over 500,000 people in New Hampshire showed up. That's a turnout of 75%. It's tempting to think of the presidential election between the Republicans and the Democrats. But remember, a decision made by the Constitutional Convention was that the presidential election would be a separate election. What does that mean? It would not be connected to the election for Congress. And you would not have, though it was proposed and was actually the default position in the Constitution for a while, you would not have the president selected by the members of Congress, so we'd have a quasi-parliamentary system. No, there will be a separate election for that man or woman who will become president. The state's small size, 46th in the nation in terms of area, means that it can focus on this one event. Can we really say that a primary in California is going to dominate such a busy state? If California or Texas or New York were the first, would a candidate run out of money before they could even get their name out? Indeed, New Hampshire is small enough to give a long shot a fighting chance. Senator Gary Hart is probably the best example of a dream result from New Hampshire, one that political campaigns now long for and might be getting a little distant. You know Hart from a sex scandal. This is before that. Think 1983 and Reagan. Yes, it's hard to believe now. It's silly to even talk about the 1984 election, right? It was a blowout. But in 1983, the economy wasn't so good. Employment was high. Reagan looked beatable. And so the candidates lined up. You had at least three: the former vice president, Walter Mondale, Alan Cranston, a senator from the then swing state of California, and John Glenn, an American hero. Glenn would be no competition for Mondale. Mondale had labor and organized parts of the Democratic Party locked up. Mondale wins big in Iowa, and the New York Times says, with Glenn's defeat in Iowa, there's no stopping Mondale now. He has no challenger. Then the voters of New Hampshire chose an obscure candidate who previously had had only 3% of the vote for the nomination of his party for president of the United States, Gary Hart, senator from Colorado. He trounced Mondale in New Hampshire and went from a long shot, turned it into a two-man race. A race that would end up going all the way to the convention. It was, Mondale said, a cold shower. It sure was. But despite the defeat, it actually had a benefit for Mondale as well as Hart. Mondale was able to eliminate another challenger. After New Hampshire, Glenn's campaign was finished. And that's something people forget about New Hampshire, and something that might be very applicable to the politics today in 2012, coming out of the Iowa caucus. Romney, Ron Paul, Santorum, and a bunch of lesser candidates now, Gingrich, Perry. It's not only that New Hampshire can propel a winner, but it also can convince some of the lesser candidates to drop out if they don't win place or show. It's a good predictor, not perfect. Been 15 contests since 1952. On the Democratic side, New Hampshire's picked the winner 8 times. On the Republican side, New Hampshire's picked the winner 11 times. Some of those times were incumbents who were not being opposed. New Hampshire's bailiwick, for a while, was not picking the nominees so much as the president. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, Bush all got New Hampshire's blessing. New Hampshire had an unblemished streak. Then 1992. Kind of a fluke occurred when Bill Clinton came in second to Massachusetts Senator Paul Tsongas. Clinton spun it. It was Tsongas's backyard, New Hampshire. It's so close. People move there from Massachusetts. So, of course, Tsongas won. But I came in second. It's interesting that in 2012, by the way, you have a front runner from Massachusetts, and it doesn't appear so far that anyone is applying Clinton's rule. Maybe that spin was really good and just applied to his year. That aside, Clinton broke the trend in 1992. We haven't had a president who's been elected since who won New Hampshire. What's going on? Is the magic gone? Well, I think there's a couple of things. Other states, most notably South Carolina, have intervened. South Carolina's primary was moved up in 1980, partially to help Ronald Reagan. And it did. Has worked as a kind of counterweight to New Hampshire. So when McCain in 2000 bested the frontrunner, George W. Bush, the governor of Texas, son of the president, who was supposed to be invincible, the Bush campaign was stunned. Supporters were concerned. Why were there pictures of Bush up there snowboarding? Why wasn't he meeting with, well, McCain had all this gravitas? The Bush campaign went down to South Carolina and unleashed, or what the media called, the Death Star, a series of ads comparing McCain's positions to Democrats. He won South Carolina and pretty much erased the New Hampshire win. There was a little bit of contest after that, but Bush had it locked up. I won't say South Carolina eliminated New Hampshire's influence, but it mitigated it. But I also think there's more of an awareness these days about the inside baseball, something like what happened in 1968, as I demonstrated. A story of an upstart senator losing by 7 points. There would be a story of how Eugene McCarthy gamed the system, spent too much time in New Hampshire while Lyndon Johnson spent none, and ended up losing anyway. We would interview political consultants and get their opinions. So I think in 1996, when Pat Buchanan beat Bob Dole, it was surprising. But it was also clear Dole had run a very boring, say-nothing campaign in New Hampshire. And Pat Buchanan just simply had more activist strength. But that was better known. And really, Buchanan's victory in New Hampshire was written off. So you went from this history of unblemished picking the president, picking the nominees, to, well, occasionally there can be someone who games the system and have some strange results. So let's look at the whole picture. So that's why I think now primaries are more complex. These are two examples. New Hampshire still awarded Gore, Kerry, and McCain in 2008 the nominations of their party after winning in New Hampshire. New Hampshire was influential for each of those men in each of those races. And it still matters now. Look at all the candidates flacking there. The money, the media. After the very close result between frontrunner Mitt Romney, only winning Iowa by 8 votes, and the upstart Rick Santorum gaining the conservatives, coming pretty close to beating Mitt Romney, I noticed something interesting. Santorum's campaign immediately said they were going to New Hampshire. They didn't decide, as some conservative candidates proposed, to go hide out in South Carolina, wait for that primary, and in effect, write off New Hampshire. Santorum didn't do that. Good politics, bad politics. I think it says this, though. New Hampshire is still important, and his campaign made a decision they simply couldn't write it off. Not to contest New Hampshire was still, in their minds at least, not to run for president. Time will tell if it's a good decision. Two things could come out of it, of course. Santorum gets a close second again, where he wasn't supposed to, and definitely emerges as the contender to Mitt Romney. Or he loses badly, and then it's just a matter if he's able, like Clinton was, to spin it, to write off the New Hampshire primary, get down to South Carolina, and win there. New Hampshire is no longer the sole kingmaker of any of these primaries. Other states have moved up, and people are very aware of that. A candidate who can win New Hampshire, but makes it so obvious that they can't win anywhere else, will go nowhere in any American political party today. Picking the president is too much to ask of any one state, even a state that takes it so seriously. Perhaps we have the perfect match here. New Hampshire's still first, still provides a role fleshing out the race, but it doesn't get the criticism that being the sole kingmaker would bring to the state. Here's one thing we know. In 2015 and 2016, candidates will, I guarantee you, flock to Nashua, Manchester, and other lovely towns in the Granite State, seeking its nod. I want to thank you for listening. Websites myhistorycanbeatupyourpolitics.com. On that site, there's a link for the archives. It's $14.99. It is everything that we've recorded just about since 2006. We've been doing this for 5 years. If you do like the program, please tell somebody about it. The iTunes comments, your own blog, your Facebook page, your Twitter. Spread the word. Other people might be interesting, particularly now that we're heading into a bit of politics here. Thanks for listening.